dive right in here. So before we get started on this, unless you've truly had your head buried in the sand, the markets have been anything but friendly to us here over the past couple of weeks. Let's just call it first part of 2020 or first 6 months here of 2022. But certainly a week and a half or so ago, things got a little interesting with what was happening. And so depending on how the two or how everybody's feeling, I think that advisors fall typically into two different camps when we have these type of scary markets. On one hand, there's advisors that feel completely calm and completely in control about how they communicate with their clients, the messaging that they have, the cadence of that messaging, how they frame what's happening as it pertains to their own respective investment philosophy. And then there are other advisors that sometimes struggle with just what's the next best word that I can say? How do I frame that message? How do I present that? How do I start thinking through this through the lens of our clients and how our clients are thinking about this? We had Carl Richards in a previous session join Stephanie for this type of conversation. This is in the portal. This is in community or the Limitless platform. So go ahead and look into the library there. I think you can just search for scary markets and that will pull up this presentation along with a couple of other, I believe there's a couple of resources that are going to be that are there as well. Yeah, we have some sample client communications that you can see, a link to the Kitsis and Carl conversation back to episode number 17. Side note, if you're listening to podcasts, I would really encourage you to give Kitsis and Carl a listen. They're short conversations, 30 minutes or so. And it's nice to hear from two different perspectives. And they've had a couple of other conversations either directly or indirectly related to talking about investments, talking about the markets with clients, especially during times of unrest, like kind of what we're in right now. So if you're in that situation, I've posted on Tribe as well, a couple of other resources. Nick Murray is a timeless resource, a timely platform that you can use to send out to your clients. If you're using Nick Murray, again, you know the rules here, but if you're not using Nick Murray or you're thinking about using him, just be sure that you read and understand his fine print and the way in which you can share it. You cannot just copy and paste it. You have to send it as an attachment, as a PDF attachment, et cetera. But it's really, really good, well-written commentary. A friend of mine, Ashby Daniels, has also started a similar type of platform. Moneyvisuals.com is another platform that you can use. And I believe, again, I posted in Tribe about this, but off the cuff, I believe you can use the promo code Lifestyle for a slight discount on Money Visuals. Ashby, for what it's worth, my two cents on the way that he writes is he does a good job, I feel, of connecting the personal side of money and what it means for people that are getting to the point of accumulating wealth and then transitioning into retirement. He is very much I don't want to say a passive investor, but he's not a technical investor, right? This isn't how do we time the market? How do we think about this? It's more or less of letting markets work, but he backs it up with data, kind of puts it in that big perspective. Kind of, in my opinion, a little bit of a combination of, you can tell it's been infused with, influenced by Nick Murray and his writings, his philosophy, as well as Carl Richards and some of just the basics, the visualization of that commentary. So again, moneyvisuals.com is that. Pamela, thanks for the comment there on Ashby's work. So those are two resources that come to mind off the cuff with communicating to clients. I think, just for what it's worth, my own personal two cents, and I think this is the difficult, it's the balancing act that we as advisors have to manage when we're talking to clients about what's happening in the markets. Because on one hand, I feel like advisors traditionally talk to clients about, don't pay attention to the markets, don't look at your accounts all the time, don't do this, right? Carl and in a couple of his conversations, he's talked about, I need to break the addiction to financial pornography, right? And how do we eventually grow clients to the point where they trust the markets, they trust the process, implicitly or explicitly, they trust you to do the right decision and make the right decision and manage their money in a prudent and responsible way. And so that's one side of it. And then the other side, we're thinking about, how do I send out communication about the markets? How do I communicate with clients about what's happening? How do I give them information that is just enough to make them feel comfortable, but yet I'm not contributing to the problem of the overwhelm of information about what's happening in the markets, right? It's this, don't pay attention. Oh, but pay attention to my stuff over here where I talk about that. And I think that's the balancing act that advisors have to balance in the communication with their clients. Now, if you're an advisor that is much more technical in your portfolio management, if you are one that is, in essence, either directly or indirectly, that's part of your value proposition, is you're putting in a lot of work on the portfolio management, you're a much more active advisor where you're buying and trading, and clients are essentially either primarily, or it's pretty high on the value list that you're an active advisor, you're an active trader, and you have your secret sauce, your special sauce, if you will, that you're introducing to clients. Candidly, I can't tell you how to communicate in that aspect. That's not my investment philosophy. So that is going to be a different type of messaging. But I think regardless of how you're thinking about the markets and regardless of how you manage your clients' money on their behalf, the common goal here is getting to the why, right? Clients don't care about our solutions. They care about their problems, which is one of my favorite Carlisms that I've ever heard him say. And when we have markets like this, at the end of the day, there's questions behind the questions about why clients are asking questions. Or if they don't have questions, I'm sure they still have questions. They're not just directly coming to you about those questions. So at the end, regardless of how we're managing money, clients all care about one thing. Do I have enough money? Can I spend enough out of my portfolio to maintain the quality of life, to align intention with action, and live life on purpose? And whatever's happening in the markets over here, to have the peace of mind, comfort, and confidence to know that I'm still being taken care of and I can live my best life today. All that stuff that's happening over here, I want to know that I want to know that there's a plan for this, and I want to know that we're evaluating, that we're looking at it. This is where advisors' money is earned in markets like this. And this is where our relationship, it's easy to make money, quote unquote, in the markets when everything's going up and to the right. These are the times when investors' resolve are tested, and the best investment philosophy is the one that a client can stick with. The key there is, how are you communicating that to your client? So a couple of different resources here. Again, use that to your own prerogative. If you have questions about anything that there, again, always feel comfortable pinging us in Tribe. Happy to provide any additional context or resources as needed. One more item, and this is the fun stuff. I love that, because this is truly the work that we're doing on the business, right? Everybody here on this call in some capacity is responsible for the success of their practice as a business. There's a lot of advisors that I meet, and a lot of them that I meet through the coaching program here. And candidly, I used to be one of them as well. And I still am to an extent, but there's a lot of advisors that are tremendous advisors, but haven't really been taught how to run a business and what we should be measuring in the business. Ethan, your question, is this page available for a download? Yes, the everything that we're talking about here today is being recorded. It will be uploaded to the Limitless portal here in the next couple of days. But the quarterly business review agenda, if you go to there is a whole quarterly business review section on Limitless portal. So I believe it's quite literally on the homepage right now. If you log in, the quarterly business review is right there. At least it is on mine. Again, it's staring at me right in the face, because this is the time of year when we are 6 months into the business. One of my favorite phrases, and again, not my phrase, but it's taken from Peter Drucker, famous business management, you know, kind of father of modern day management. What gets measured gets managed, and what gets managed gets improved. And the whole idea of being a great advisor and a great business owner is knowing not only how you work in the business, but also the work that you do on the business. And the quarterly business review is meant to be kind of that funnel where we take our three-year vision, we distill it down into our one-year vision, we then break that one-year vision into quarterly segments that we're going to be working on, we then take our quarterly segments and we break them down into monthly initiatives, we take that monthly and break that down into weekly, we take that weekly and we break it down into daily tasks. All of that is condensed into the quarterly business review. And again, there's a lot of information on here, but everything that is on this screen is going to be available in the quarterly business review packet. I think it's a 27 page, if my memory serves me, 24. 24-page document in the portal there. There's a lesson that you can go listen in as well, where Tiffany and Jared combined with Stephanie talked about how to think about the quarterly business review. I just want to give some practical feedback, if you will, based off of how we've used the quarterly business review, because as I look at it and I think of and I try and put myself in the situation of an advisor that is being introduced to this concept for the very first, well, now the second time. We've talked about it before, but this is the second time that we're bringing it up in the course of your coursework here in Limitless, is that when you look at everything on the 24-page agenda, or excuse me, the 24-page workbook, it can seem like a lot of information. And it can seem like it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition, because there's a lot of information that the quarterly business review that the QBR is asking for, but yet some of the areas, there's not a lot of information, or there's not a lot of space for you to put that. The idea for the QBR that I have found to be beneficial is it is something that triggers me to build everything else elsewhere. So what I mean by that is, as I walk through the different pages of the QBR, it's simply triggering my mind to know where I need to go to peel back the layers of that onion to get to the actual actionable item that needs to get done. For example, managing the financial performance of my firm. That is something that I do on a monthly basis. Quite literally before this call, was spending some time going through our year-to-date budget, budget compared to actuals, and looking at how we are trending on top-line revenue, operating expenses, and then basically my EBOC, right? My earnings before owner's compensation. How in alignment is that from what I projected at the beginning of the year? How is that? How am I tracking year-to-date? The QBR will give you that trigger. It will give, or not trigger, it will give you that nudge to look at that, but you're obviously not going to use the QBR to track all of that. You're going to use your financial software. You're going to use QuickBooks, or you're going to use Peachtree, or whatever accounting software that you're using to track and manage. But the QBR is going to give you the resources. It's going to give you the nudge and the guide on how to think, on how to think about that. I will say that everything that we do in our firm from a QBR standpoint, how we act on that, everything is housed in Asana. That is what we use. I've talked about this in the past, but I'll reiterate it again. Everything that is done in the business for clients is documented in Redtail. Everything that we do on the business, which is primarily, if not entirely, everything in the QBR, we manage in Asana. Because regardless of what you're thinking about, at its core, the QBR is simply giving you the information of who does what, when does it need to get done, and for which project. And you have to have a system to track the progress. The QBR is not necessarily an action tracking document. It's more of a 30,000, 15,000, 10,000, 5,000 foot view, of the important rocks, the important initiatives in your business, a lot of which are instigated. The genesis of them happens because of the work that we're doing here in Limitless. So it's simply a method for capturing and collecting and organizing what it is that you're going to work on. I've had one-on-one calls with a couple of advisors in the program that have gotten kind of stuck on the kind of the knowing doing gap there, right? I know I need to be doing this stuff, and I've got the Limitless guide here, but I'm struggling in the doing. I'm struggling in connecting the dots on what I should be doing. And there was one advisor that I was having a conversation with. She's like, I have marketing blocked off my calendar, but I can't seem to make any progress. And my response to her was, well, what is marketing? And this, right, Pam, that sounds like me, right? And I don't want to deviate too far down the path here, but I think it's an important concept to understand, is that our brains are the smartest, are the dumbest smart machine, right? What I mean by that is, the brain is the better phrase to say I don't know where I heard this first, but the brain is a wonderful servant but a horrible master. And so what I mean by that is, it will serve us very, very well if we give it the script, if we give it actionable items. But it's a horrible master in that it's not going to think for us. It's not going to complete the thought. So if you have blocked out on your calendar marketing, what in that, you know, what does that mean? And so the idea here, if you rely on your QBR, if you fill that out, great, that's awesome. To me, doing the QBR and then calling it quits right there is akin to a client doing an estate plan, but never actually updating their beneficiaries. You did the work, but you didn't finish the drill. You didn't take it to the goal line here. And the idea here is, as we go through the QBR, as you go through that, determine who does what, when does it get done, and for which client. So if we think about marketing, okay, what does marketing mean? It could mean outline next blog post. It could mean source 5 guests for my upcoming podcast recording session, which is the week of July 11th, which I still have to do because I'm supposed to be recording 20 episodes that week. So I've got some work to do. I've got some solo episodes outlined, but I've got some guests to line up as well. That is an actionable plan. So when you think of all of the items that you're going to fill in on the QBR, the idea here is that, to quote Stephen Covey right here, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. And the QBR helps filter out all the noise and focuses you on what you should be working on, but it's not entirely the action plan that you're going to work off of. For us, what we have found is that we have to transfer that into some type of system that we can easily assign to different people, either within or outside our organization. That's one of the reasons that I love Asana, is because it allows me to bring in outside resources, like our podcast producer, a content creator, a website designer, et cetera, all of those outside resources that aren't directly on Integrated's payroll. I can easily add them to a project in Asana and transfer to them what needs to get done, when does it need to get done, how does it need to get done. I can use Loom to record some quick videos, some quick thoughts, and just punt that onto their schedule. I couldn't necessarily do that in the QBR. So again, I hope I'm making my point here, but the common theme that I've had with advisors when I do one-on-one calls, and there's a sense of overwhelm, there's a sense of I'm not sure what the next best thing to do is, when I hear what they have on their calendar from a time blocking standpoint, it is specifically vague. It's specific, like I said, marketing or build out client service model. Okay, we're getting there, but what does that mean? And so think about if you find yourself in that situation as you're working through the QBR and you're working through kind of compartment or thinking about the QBR in relation to how you're feeling about your progress right now, look at your calendar and determine as to how things are blocked out and whether looking at the calendar gives you, allows you to answer the question, I have everything that I need to do this project, or I know what this means. It's not marketing, it's source guests for podcasts. It's write blog posts. It's if you're doing a COI market, or if you're doing a COI outreach program, it's find three new COIs and schedule one-on-ones, right? It has to be a specific SMART goal, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, timely. Try that if you're feeling like you're in that type of if you're in that type of camp. But with that, the QBR is no small feat. There are it's a lot of information, and it's really going to get you to think about your business. So as it pertains to the QBR, this is something that if you haven't done this before, if you kind of let Q1 go by and you're going to want to catch up in Q2 right now, it is something that is going to take a decent amount of time. It's probably going to take, I fair to say, it should, if you haven't done this yet, it will take you a couple of hours to probably think through and document and start pulling things together. The biggest challenge in that, as you're pulling data for the biggest challenge you're going to have in that, as you're pulling data for the QBR, is to not get distracted and being sucked into a different project. Organize it, get it on the QBR, and then use another time after you fill it all out to now come back and prioritize and organize what you're going to work on, when you're going to work on it. So if you're going to be doing that, we understand that it's a big investment of time. We know that it's worth it because, again, what gets measured gets managed. And that's the only way that you can measure progress in your firm. So complete your QBR survey by July 12th to be entered into a raffle to win one of the following. The two, one you can see right on the screen here. So these are the three prizes up for grabs here. Be sure to, Leonard, Catherine, what's the best way? Because I apologize, I don't know the answer to this. Do you have a logistical question here? What's the best way that they should submit that? Should they email that in? Should they upload it somewhere? What's the best way for them to get their finished QBR to the team?
That is a great question.
Didn't mean to throw back office under the bus there a little bit, but
no, that's fine. You know what? Go ahead and email coaching@limitlessfa.life, and that's always a good way for us to get your stuff. So,
as I say, that was probably the easiest. In absence of any clear, definitive answer, that's the easy backup right there. Yeah. It's just and there shouldn't be any really sensitive information in there. So, just again, you shouldn't have any security issues there. So, what is it again? Coaching at limitless.
Yeah, coaching at limitlessfa.life. Everyone should have that email already anyway, because if you have any questions. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Thanks, Catherine.
Where, Annika asks, where do you get the survey? The survey, the QBR survey, the quarterly business review, we have the word survey in there. I would consider it more of a workbook. It's directly, if you log into the, correct? Leona, we're talking about the same thing here, right?
Yes, it's on the lessons page, right as you go onto the website.
Yeah, when you go onto the website, all the resources and things are linked right there. Yep. So all that's going to be right there in the library. Just click on QBR, click on download, because that's what we're asking to send in. It's the 24-page workbook that basically just has everything. Yeah, that makes sense, Annika. I think it a little bit of confusion there, but yeah, what we're asking is to have that QBR sent in, and that's what we'll use as the ticket, if you will, into the raffle. So. Plus three winners will receive $1,000 off their 2023 Limitless re-enrollment. So giddy up. Love to have everybody join us for 2023. And what better way to do that than encourage $1,000 off. So awesome. All right. Any question? Before we dive in here, let me check Slido again. Retreat one is the Slido. We'll come up to Ethan's question here shortly on tech spend. Did someone mention there was a promo code for Money Visuals? Yes, I believe it is Lifestyle. Yeah, it's either Limitless. I think it's Lifestyle. You know what? I'm trying to think of the best way to confirm that. I know I've got it buried in a reference folder in my email. But that's not open right now. And I know I have it on Tribe as well. I think it's actually Lifestyle. Try either one. It's either Limitless or Lifestyle. One of the two is the promo code for Money Visuals. I'm almost positive it's one of the two. Ed asked a question. Client discussions lately have been focused on opportunities in this volatile market, I-bonds, Roth conversions, putting in new money to the market, et cetera. What other opportunities in this environment are you talking about? That's a pretty good start, Ed. I think this is also where it's going to be niche specific. So for us, our clients are talking about how does this affect the pricing in their optical? How does this affect the pricing model for the exams that they're charging? How do they think about giving cost of living increases for their team? How do they recruit and train staff? How do they find associates? So for ours, it is not entirely around the market. It's more around the business risks, if you will, that they're seeing in the current marketplace right now, which I think is going to be different than some of our other clients that are in retirement, right? We always have the joking conversation in our office. What do you call an optometrist the day after they sell the practice for a big liquidity event? Every one of your target market clients, most Limitless advisors, right, work with a lot of retirees. So the day after one of our ideal clients sell their practice, they're now your ideal avatar, ideal prospect. And so it's a matter of making sure that whatever core concerns that they have are that you have that question. I think for our clients, revisiting and reminding them of the war chest that we have, especially for clients that are in distribution mode, just reaffirming your portfolio was built for this. We plan for this. This is why we keep a bond position of ultra short bonds, why we keep a war chest of cash reserves for a couple of years worth of distributions. This is why we plan for those things. This is when we remind them, hey, remember those conversations a couple of years ago when everything was going up and to the right and you were wondering why we still had this lazy money on the sidelines? These are the reasons that we have that. So it's revisiting those conversations with clients, because what that does is it directly answers the fundamental question that is behind the concerns that they have in the market. They don't necessarily care about what's happening in the market. What they care about is how that impacts and influences the plan that they put together in good times. So this is when that's what we're talking about. Anybody else want to comment in chat based off of Ed's question? What other opportunities in this environment are people talking about? Joshua put in their tax loss harvesting. Again, great opportunity right now to think about tax loss harvesting. Roth conversions, which Ed, you had mentioned already, it's a great time to convert and be asset location specific when you're talking about converting for assets, especially if you're doing in-kind conversions. That's always a good option. Anything else anybody wants to put in there? Again, Ed's question is in Slido. You can simply type the reply there, or if you want to throw it into chat, we can have that Have that done there as well. Ethan mentions we are having clients review spending and having discussions around cash flow capacity. Agreed, this is where there are, regardless of your portfolio, and again, especially for clients that are coming up to or working through the distribution mode in retirement, this is where it's that balancing act of having conversations with clients about how they're going to keep pace with the rising cost of everything from healthcare to groceries and travel and gas, to what can the portfolio sustain? How do you stress that portfolio? How do you understand what the upper guardrail limits are, the lower guardrails? You know, what's the bandwidth of that portfolio, and how does that contrast to the distribution and strategy? That's what we're paid to do. That's the value of the advisor, is to not only manage the portfolio, but then at the end of the day, the asset doesn't matter to the client. The portfolio doesn't matter to the client. It's what is the income that I can get off of my portfolio. That is ultimately what they care about. So having those good discussions is awesome. Ted, yeah, mentions discounted Roth conversions. So very good, very good. All right, again, keep the questions coming in Slido there. So let's go ahead and, Cooper, I appreciate you being patient here and kind of camping on in the wings here, but the intention in today's conversation is going to basically follow up on a lot of what we talked about during the retreat Q&A, where we talked about basically utilizing human capital, utilizing the talent that we all have access to in various different capacities in our firm as a way to scale special and be as productive as we possibly can. So what we're going to do right now, again, if you have questions, we can certainly take those and put those into, again, you want to throw them in chat, that's fine. Ideally, use Slido just so that we can maintain and track the different questions. And this is, again, it's a little bit of a different office hours here because we're doing a wrap up based off a retreat, because we typically cover a lot of information at retreat and it can be sometimes information overload. So we've given you opportunities and time to have a lot of what we talked about marinade. Hopefully you've had some chance to reflect on that, look at your business and how what we've talked about relates to the goal of where you want your practice to go. So any questions that we want to dive into? And if not, I know Catherine and Leon and I were talking before we let everybody in that there's certainly a number of options that we can pull from Tribe and kind of turn this into a quasi office hours, Tribe talk and coaching call at the same time. So anybody want to kick things off? Let's see. Michelle put something here in chat, watching old retreat videos and hearing members and coaches talk about how they are doubling or tripling their revenue and their best clients are finding them and working with them. I don't understand the how. I know what my vision looks like, but I don't know the steps to make it happen. Am I missing something? Well, we can unpack that, Michelle.
Yeah, I know there's a lot there. It's just, I feel like I'm missing a step. It's the how. Like I hear about how. That's the only thing I can say.
How are we finding their best clients and attracting them?
And how are you doubling revenue when you hear these success stories? Like I can see the vision, but I don't know the roadmap or the steps.
So it's a couple of different places that I think we could take that. I want to be sensitive to both what you're wanting to share, as well as just, like you said, a number of questions that are just nested inside of that one question. I think the first thing that comes to mind is, gosh, are you feeling like you're having a trouble? Like what's the how? How to find them, how to onboard them, how to quote the fee, how to service them, how to define who it is you do your best work for. Because that's the common idea that we're all working to, like that, those are the answers for every different way that we talk about the how. That's, we have to answer all of those in order to go from here to there, right? How do we can't market to someone we don't know who we're marketing to. So we don't know, we have to know what our service. So where is the how? What's the most important how that you don't have answers to yet?
I think I know the who we're marketing to. It's retirees. I teach people how to retire. That's what I've done. That's what I've always done. But where do I find them? How do I market to them? How do I, you know, get that how do I fill the seats on the bus?
What does your current marketing plan look like? How are you currently letting the world know that you're out there willing and able and capable of helping them?
I have a website, but I don't do anything with it really.
Okay.
I don't blog or podcast or I don't do those things.
COIs?
I have some. I don't use them like I could.
So you have a storefront, but no one really knows that you're there, and you don't have a messaging campaign out there to let people know that you're there. I'm being facetious and a little.
No, you're right on.
But
you're right on.
Let's do this. Let's just in the spirit of making sure that we stay high level and make sure that we address the retreat, the things that we were talking about from the previous session or from the retreat. Let's set up a time to do a one-on-one, and we can have a deeper conversation. Just kind of because I want to understand what you've already done up until this point. What are the levers that you've pulled into practice to bridge the gap of where you were when before Limitless versus where you're currently at right now? Want to see what progress you've made and where you've spent that time, so that we can just understand what still needs to be filled in. What are the gaps that still need to be filled in? The cadence and communication with your clients, letting clients know that you're open to introductions. I don't like the word referrals. I just like the word introductions, because that's all you're looking for is the ability to have a conversation with someone else. Are you doing office hours? Are you doing Q&A with clients? We've had advisors that have had, I'm doing one Wednesday night. I'm doing one in concert with a company called The Power Practice, which is one of the leading practice management consulting firms. We're doing the title of the presentation that we're doing is called Practicing Optometry in a Post-COVID Landscape. And it's myself on, it's The Power Practice. And then we're actually having Ted Jenkins on as our quote unquote economist. Those of you in the advisory space and kind of keeping tabs with some of the early adopters to digital marketing and building a brand. Ted is the founder of Oxygen Financial. And he's since sold that company and now is more of a personality, if you will, has a podcast, is CNN's on a couple of different national platforms. But Ted's coming on as our quote unquote high level economist, typically taking the role of the advisor would play. I'm coming on as the business consultant and the advisor to the optometry space from a financial standpoint. And then Power Practice is talking about the true practice management concepts. But we threw that together in a week. We started talking about that on Tuesday of last week, and we've got the event scheduled. It's a Q&A. All we're doing is we're each talking for 10 minutes, and then we're opening it up to Q&A. We have 65 people registered for it already, and it has even gone onto our distribution list already. And we have 700 some people on our distribution list. So we're probably going to have a couple hundred ODs on this call, but that we had a very clear intention when we started with that. We know that ODs are asking questions. Back to Ed's question, what are we talking about with clients? A lot of it comes back to what is it that they care about? What is that ideal client? Because they're going to have different concerns than your pre-retirees and your ideal marketplace. So what are the common concerns that they're having? And can you throw something together? Can you do an online town hall meeting? Can you do an office hours or some type of basic webinar pulling JP Morgan's guide to the markets and throw together just what is the current investment scan, current marketplace look like, and how should pre-retirees plan for that? Those are just some, again, I'm just totally grabbing at ideas here off the cuff, but those are some of the actionable items that are the best, that are ways in which you can start attracting and letting people know that you exist. Because you're right, having a website is important. But in the absence of people knowing about you and knowing that you have that website and that you're open, willing, able to take clients, that you can help them, here's the process, here's what it means to experience that. Again, there's a lot to unpack just in that one question, but I think that would be worth having kind of a practice audit, if you will, mid-year, just to find out what you've done, where you were before Limitless happened, the progress that you've made, where we could kind of double tap and or double click and zoom in a little bit on your practice, and then determine what's going to best move the needle. Yes, other people would like to hear that conversation as well. So maybe that is a tribe talk conversation, I want to be fair to you as well, Michelle. I don't want to just dive in and start peeling back the layers of the onion right now, but that is something that we could potentially do in this call. I don't want to hijack the whole idea here of having retreat Q&A. Candidly, I don't see a whole lot of questions in Slido, and I don't see a whole lot in chat as well. And so, like I said, this is a quasi office hours / coaching call. So we have a little bit, and guess what? The boss isn't here. So we can take our liberties. This is better. What is it? Let's beg for forgiveness before ask for permission.
All right. Look, there's a lot of people interested in this. So, okay.
I'd love to see a start to finish talk on marketing, please. Well, Barbara, so even just that one question in and of itself there, that's a whole course. Let me get back to, okay, I'm going to put a pin in those two conversations because they're very much related. I want to go back to someone that said there was a question in Slido. How do you successfully transition clients to a different advisor in your same office, particularly if this is a small client and we're handing them to a junior advisor? Oh, I love this question. Okay. So let me answer this one briefly and succinctly because it's very solvable. We just did it in our firm and know a lot of other advisors that have done it in a very similar way with very similar results. So my first question, and this is not, I'm not necessarily asking for the answer right now, but I would very, very much encourage whoever asked the original question, is the client worth handing off to? Here's what I mean by that. Can't tell you how many advisors, and I almost went down this path as well until I did the math on it. How many of us have clients or have thought about the idea of, oh, I'm going to take all of my quote unquote lower tier clients, my junior client, and the solution to me not wanting to serve lower revenue clients is I'm going to add a $80,000 expense to my P&L and shove all of my already lower profitable, if even profitable at all, clients to someone that I just added another $80,000 expense to my P&L. So my first question before you're doing that, I'm going to assume that you've done the exercise, that you've done the forecasting and projection, that we're going to go ahead, we're going to do the projection and forecasting in your business that this is a beneficial move in my business, that future looking, projecting, if I add this expense and I transition these clients to this now added expense of a junior advisor, I'm still profitable, or you know, a lead advisor, whoever else that is, that I'm going to be a lead, that it's going to be a beneficial transition. So hold on, let me just double check here. Got a message that I just want to verify. Let's see here. I know I deviated off the task here and I wanted to see, I hit the wrong button here. Bear with me here 1 second. Not sure if we lost Cooper or not. I know we deviated totally off. I think we lost Cooper. My apologies, Cooper. I know we deviated off and we didn't have a whole lot of questions on things that were related to Rockstar right hands, things like that. If we have additional questions that are going to be beneficial for Cooper to address, I will make sure to write them down. I'll connect with him. We'll get answers posted here. But again, we didn't have a lot of questions in the beginning. So to be respectful of Cooper's time, I think he punted and was going to do things that were more in alignment with where his time was taking him right now. So, all right, let me come back to this question here. So making sure, again, assuming you've done the projections that it's profitable to do that and that your fee schedule on those lower tier clients are still going to be profitable to the firm, to you as the practice owner, that there's still a profit margin to you after transitioning them to an advisor of which you had to increase your operational expense by hiring that advisor. Assuming that to be true, we've done it successfully in our firm when I brought John on. And John, just to be fair to him and bring clarity and context to everybody on the call, I would not refer to John as a junior advisor. John has been an advisor, I think about 6 months longer than I have. So he came into the business in mid-2007, I think is when it was, and had been working as a lead advisor in the firm prior to joining our firm. So we were looking to transition from one first chair advisor over to a second first chair advisor. The way we did that was in three client meetings. The first, John and I, which let me be clear. Yes, I understand it's not a direct, it's an expensive way to do it from a time, from an advisor's time perspective, right? Because we're using two advisors time slot for one client appointment. But from a relationship standpoint, it makes the most sense. It's the easiest way to introduce and just kind of start shifting the weight from me as the legacy advisor to John as the new advisor that's going to be working with them. So we did one meeting with the client during one review season, during one surge, where I was primarily leading the conversation. John was largely observant, maybe had a conversation or a comment and some advice here and there. But candidly, this was John's opportunity to just meet the client, see the dynamic of me between the client, learn the case, et cetera. Second review season that we did, John was, the roles were switched. I was there as well. John was the one primarily leading the conversation. I would chime in every now and then with some additional thoughts. If we ever got questions from the client in that conversation, or there were planning considerations or changes, I would, if they asked me, I would give an abbreviated response, but then I would really pump that over to John and say, John, what do you think? How would you think about the answer to that? Because I wanted them to start viewing John as the primary lead, as the advisor that was going to be giving them the advice. And then the third review that we did, we sent out a proactive notice to clients that we're going to be transitioning over to John, letting them know. And I have a copy of that letter that I can post. I think I've already shared it, but I can double check. Catherine, if you can make a note to ping me afterwards to send over the communication that we sent to clients, letting them know that for this upcoming review season, they were going to be scheduling with John primarily. So I did it. We did have a communication that we sent out. It was a letter. I also did a brief video along with that letter, that video via Loom. And so we just included a link to that video, basically letting clients know that due to the growth of the firm, the demands of the firm on me, additional business interests, the work that I'm doing in the optometry space, et cetera, that my return on investment in order to have maximum positive impact at scale in helping clients plan for the future was going to be more in the promoting and positioning of the firm in the marketplace than it was in individual client service. And so for this next round of reviews, you're going to be meeting with John as the advisor that's going to be running through your plan. And that's paraphrasing, but pretty darn on point with the messaging that we had to those clients. We had, truth be told, we lost one client from doing that because they... It's a compliment indirectly in that when I had a conversation afterward, they said, we signed up for the Adam Show, I think they said, or something like that. You made financial planning fun and we've been spoiled with you. I do remember those two phrases, which was complimentary to hear. I appreciated that. But it was, for lack of a better word, a little frustrating that they viewed that anybody other than me was not going to be capable. I don't know. And so we did end up transitioning one client away from them. We had a couple of clients. We had two, and I say a couple, we had two that did push back on us a little bit and say, we'd really prefer to continue working with Adam. I did have conversations with each one of them to manage and set expectations that we would continue to work with them. So I'm still including John in those conversations, and John is handling all of the client requests that come in from those relationships, because I want them to see that the only time that they get me, if they're going to get me at all, is in the initial client conversation. So I did essentially kind of call my bluff a little bit. I knew that I was going to have capacity to have a couple of those clients fall back. And so I knew in my capacity, but we transitioned a lot of relationships over that were working with me over to John. And then for every new client that's easy one. For every new client that has joined the firm, I haven't worked with a new client since, I think it was October, November of last year. Every new relationship, we've got 13 new clients here to date. We did 7, I believe it was last year, from when John joined. Every new client that has come on board, we have set the expectation very early up front that you came because of me, but you're going to stay because of us. John is your lead advisor relationship. He's the one that you'll primarily be interacting with in the firm as it pertains to the advice and the ongoing financial planning experience. And we've set that expectation in the second conversation as a prospect, not as a client, but a second conversation as a prospect that if they go through this process and they align with our firm, that they will be working with John. So I don't, none of us want to do that. We don't want to have a bait and switch. We don't want to lead them along as a prospect and me, Adam's involved, Adam. And oh yeah, John's here. John's involved in the second conversation. And then after they pay the financial planning fee, after they have their onboarding schedule meeting, they just see John in the Zoom meeting and they're like, where's Adam? Oh yeah, by the way, I'm going to be the advisor that's working with you. No, we don't want to do that. Transparency and honesty are the two core values or two of the top core values of the firm. And so we set that expectation up front very early on that you came because of Adam, the writing, the speaking, the podcast, referral, whatever that was, but you're going to stay because of the team approach that we take to financial planning and to client service. And that indirectly comes back to, you know, building the bionic business, building the team, as we're talking about here in retreat, or that we talked about in retreat. It's yes, as the advisor, the clients are largely, I'm assuming, coming because of you, because of the work that you do either with clients and generating referrals and qualified introductions, centers of influence conversations, et cetera. But it's imperative on you, if you want to free up your time and you want the agency and freedom and flexibility of having a quote unquote lifestyle practice and not having everything be dependent on you, that you introduce this concept to your prospects, not as clients, but as prospects, through the communication, through the emails. I learned this from Tiffany. We were having this conversation, I think it was last September in Park City at the retreat. We were just having this conversation about how important little words are. And we have really strived in our firm to get rid of the I's and my's. So it's not, I did this. It's not my advice. Get rid of the I's and my's and introduces the we, our, and us, right? We suggest, our recommendation is that, our thought process is, right? You create the sense that the client belongs to the firm. They are working with the firm. Yes, you as the advisor, you may be the only advisor right now. And even if that is your only aspiration and you don't intend on bringing on a lead advisor like I did with John or building a team around you, and you want to stay small, cap it, and be the advisor, if you never intend on having team members, let me rephrase it this way. Unless you plan on doing everything yourself, I think it's very beneficial to use the words to use the words we, us, our, because now it gives the client the perception and the true understanding that they work with the firm. Yes, your name happens to be on the door and above the door, right? But it's a team that delivers the client experience. And so hopefully that was a really long-winded answer to that question. Three meetings, that's how we transitioned it from me over to John. Like I said, a couple of pushbacks, but I'd have to look at the numbers, but I believe we transitioned. John's working with, I think it's 70 households right now. I could pull the numbers real quick. It's about 70 households, if not maybe a little bit more. And we brought 13 clients on year to date. We did 7 last year. So we transitioned 50 some relationships to John full in. We had one that decided to transition out. Side note, their assets are still with us, even though they said they were leaving 3 months ago. So we're just kind of waiting to see if they're actually going to leave, or I might circle back around and say, you said you were thinking about, you were going over to another advisor, but you're not going. So and then I had 2 clients that did push back that decided to stay. But again, in between, John is doing all the service. John is any client requests that come in, again, a benefit in having the client's email address, the dedicated client's email address. It allows us as a firm to triage requests that come in from clients. That way they're not emailing me directly. It's taken years, true, plural years, to transition all of our clients from emailing me to now emailing the firm. Still have a couple of stragglers. We just had one yesterday that, like, I'll take this as a victory. They emailed me, but they copied client's email address. So it's like, okay, I'll take that. I'm good at that. Now, when I respond, I get rid of me and I only respond from clients. So we're making that shift, but that's what makes it easier to do, because when those requests do come in, especially for clients that transition, John is the one that responds to them. So they're getting that interaction from John. They're always interacting with John. That's been the best way that we've done it. I know there's an advisor out there that he's in Ohio, his way of doing this. And if you wanted, again, just another way to think about this, what he did in between my second and third meeting, he added a little bit of a twist. He called the clients that he was going to be having meet with his now new advisor and said, Jed, I want to let you know that Alex, my new advisor, is going to be working with clients, but I'm really curious to see how he does. So would you mind if you just gave me some candid feedback as to how his interaction was with you, how you felt about the planning process and how he led the client meeting, the feeling that you had about the advice and just the rapport and relationship, blah, 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 right? And he added this whole scripted out conversation. Client was like, oh yeah, it was great, da, 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 da. Client has a meeting with again, call him Alex or whoever the advisor was. Jed, you follow up with the client. So how'd it go with Alex? Oh, he was great. I felt really, really comfortable. His advice, you know, all these positive accolades. And then indirectly you're saying, oh, good. So then you'd have no problem meeting with him going forward. And that was like, that wasn't directly what was said, but that was kind of the implication, which gave the advisor even more permission to, when the next line of reviews came around, to just automatically assume and basically communicate with the client that you're going to be meeting with Alex on the next conversation. So any additional thoughts that we have or any additional questions that come off of that? I know Catherine, thank you for posting some resources on client transitions, service model transition letter. Again, we've got a lot of resources in the library that you can use to go ahead and transition or to help you through that process if you find yourself there. But it's not something that you're going to do all at once. I guess you could. Anything's possible. We didn't do it that way. And I think the easier of a landing you can, the longer a runway, that I think you can give someone in the transition, the easier it is going to be for the relationships to do that. Let's see. All right. So Mike asked, can you speak about how you handle the training, communication, managing accountability for staff working remotely? Yes. This is, and this does come back directly to the quarterly, to the QBR as well, to the quarterly business review, because this is for us in John's remote, right? Our lead advisor, Kathy and I are local here, but John is remote down in College Station, Texas. And so one of the things that has been pivotal to us, or not pivotal, I guess it's been pivotal key to us, has been having a couple of systematic review, a couple of systematic check-ins that we have scheduled on a weekly basis. So the first is our 3M meeting, our Monday morning meeting, which happens every single Monday morning at 10 a.m., unless obviously a holiday or someone's out of office. But that is a Monday morning meeting, 10 to 11 is our time period that we have set. It is a version, if you've read the book Traction, if you've read Gina Wickman's book Traction, it is a variation on the level 10 meeting. Basically, it's connecting the dots on what was outstanding from last week, what are we planning for this week, what do we kind of have coming down the pipe. Handful of it is administrative, client related, right? Some maybe tying a bow around a few things, giving some additional details that maybe weren't given in workflow. But again, the workflows are in part driving the questions that we have in that meeting. And then inevitably we will have projects that we're working on, which coincide with things that are on our Asana project board that deal with our strategic plan and that deal with our business plan. And so it's talking about, where are we at with, you know, are we going to send out, one of the topics that we had today was sending out another tax letter for our clients that maybe filed extensions and doing that after the 4th of July. So we've got a letter that we need to write. We're going to be sending that out to all of our clients that have, that are in the tag group in Redtail that we've created. Another one was tweaking one of the emails for the final planning meeting of our clients that are going through the onboarding process. So our Monday morning meeting is more, yes, it's working in the business, but it's also working on the business. But to Mike's question, that's the communication side of it. It is scheduled Monday morning meeting, 10 to 11. John and I, as advisors, we do Planners Club from 11 to 12, which especially during review season, not so much all the time during off season, but definitely during review season, we're spending that hour going through the upcoming week's cases. Any questions, especially in his new period of, you know, getting to know clients, some of the backstory that may not be in the CRM. I was backfilling some of the qualitative details of the client. And then John and Kathy have a couple of weekly check-ins. And then John and I have a weekly check-in on Wednesdays. In the beginning, that used to be a daily check-in. We would have conversations on a daily basis about things that he was struggling with, things that he was, you know, struggling as in, what are we doing here? How do we do this? What are the platforms that we're using, right? It's just bringing them together and having him understand what it is that we have in the business and how does that connect with the advice that we're given. Again, this is going to sound as a shocker to everybody here, but having our workflows and having the documented processes in our CRM helped tremendously in just helping John understand the process. It didn't necessarily teach him everything about how to do things, but it told him what we do for everything that's involved in serving a client relationship. So that's on the communication, the training schedule. We have training resources in the library as well that will walk you through kind of building your own training plan. Tiffany, I think this was in the hiring and training session that you can see here in the Q&A. If you weren't able to catch the conversation that Tiffany and I had on training and hiring, go back and watch that presentation. Tiffany, admittedly, is much more thorough and much more regimented, if you will, on putting together a training outline and documenting how she defines success at the 30, 60, and 90-day mark of having a new team member. Ours is a little bit more, it's not as regimented. I think that's the best word to use. We just had, we had various timelines, but it wasn't 30, 60, 90. Our time period for John, bringing him on board, was more in alignment with reviews. He came on board at the end of July, early August. He had a month to basically get up to speed before we started the surge process for our fall surge. And so surge for him was essentially the forcing mechanism for him to get to know all the clients, review all the plans. He came in very technically sound, so I didn't have to teach financial planning to him. I knew his philosophy and I had vetted that out thoroughly in the interview process. So we shared very similar investment philosophies, very similar planning philosophies. I think that's important as well when you think about hiring the best person, is to make sure through your interview process, if you're hiring for technical competence, make sure you understand the philosophy and approach to that person's approach, right? To how that person plans. So that was important to me, and I made sure that I spent some time doing that. Mike, anything that you would add on top of that? Anything that I can provide additional clarity on as to how you think about? And again, I mentioned this, Asana. Asana is a great tool that we use as well, not only for just internal projects, but managing outside resources like my podcast producer, marketing people, website designer, content writers, et cetera. Anything that you'd add on top of that, Mike, that I can help clarify? Bueller. All right. I'm going to assume silence is golden here and that answers the question concisely. Let me check. Go back to a question just to get it out of there because it's been there for 2 weeks. Ethan had asked a question. Is there a benchmark for a tech spend, 15% of gross revenue? The short answer, Ethan, I don't know that, but I do have... Joel Bruckenstein and Bob Veris, and I forget the other gentleman's name, that do T3 technology tools for today. They have their annual report. It's like an 85-page document. I have a copy of that. I'll look and see in there if they have any type of benchmark. The short answer is I don't know what that exact benchmark would be. I do think it's worth going through and figuring out, just performing essentially a budget audit, just to find out where you might be spending extra money. Case in point, I've done it on a couple of pieces of technology that I just, you know, it's $100 here, it's $99 there, it's $105 here. It's like, really don't need this stuff anymore. I use it at a time, but it's like, oh, there's $3,600 that you can save. So answer the question, is this solving for a need in my practice that helps me deliver the client experience that I'm looking to deliver? One of them that I discontinued was a portfolio analyzer, a research tool. Clients are coming to me for portfolio research. They're not coming to me to back test their portfolio against our portfolio. That's just not our value add. And that's not what we, for lack of a better word, sell our firm on. And so I was paying $108 or $110 a month for something that I can count on one hand the number of times I've used this year already. So that was an easy exit. So ask yourself, is the technology that I'm using right now in alignment with the type of client that I'm serving and the experience that I want to deliver? And I can look through that T3 survey to see if there's anything. Let's see. Julie mentioned looking at developing a remote work policy. Lots of great. Yeah. Yeah, there's no shortage of information. I will say from a hiring standpoint, when I brought John on, I didn't want to have to worry about him sourcing everything. So I bought his desk, monitors, computer, All of that I just had shipped directly to his house, and he sent you that service, his signing bonus. I mean, I think all in, it was maybe $2,000, $2,500 in supplies and stuff like that. And to me, that's just a sunk cost of having a remote, remote team member. The only thing that I will care about getting back, obviously, is the computer. If something were to happen where John and I were to part ways, though, don't think that's going to happen, but you never know. And so that would be the only thing that I would be concerned about getting, which is a laptop. So it's easy to be able to a remote wipe. So that's the other thing to be considerate to consider is two things that would be important in remote capacity. Number one would be your password management tool. If you're using something like Dashlane, LastPass, there's another tool out there that I can't remember, one of the leading password managers. We personally use Dashlane Premium, Dashlane Business, I should say. And that gives us as a firm the easy ability to share passwords back and forth in a very secure way, and also be able to bulk revoke them again should something happen where we decide to part ways. And so there's a no, Felicity, I very much have a plan B, plan for the best, prepare for the worst. So that is, I think, a very good business planning phrase. So we do have a plan B in case John leaves. Both as far as technology, how I would get, that's one of the reasons that I like ShareFile as a document management, is it's easy to revoke access to documents. Dashlane from a password management has groupings in there, the ability to remove access and remove them from a seat so that they can no longer log into Dashlane to get access, to be able to directly mitigate that risk from a remote capacity. So yeah, Dashlane, LastPass, KeePass, all options. What about making sure he doesn't take the clients though? So part of his contract that he signed included a provision that says that if he leaves and he wants to bring the clients with, he can pay for them. And it's, I believe we did 4x revenue. Lisa chimed in real quick. You do not need to send us anything. The QBR will be in a SurveyMonkey. Ah, that's the read. Thank you, Lisa. ADD squirrel moment here. That's why we have the word survey in there. Don't need to send anything. There'll be a SurveyMonkey link that will be sent out, and they'll get it that way. So exactly. Thank you. Yes.
They'll come out Thursday or Friday, and then we just expect you to return it by the 12th or submit it by the 12th in order to be part of the prize pool.
Awesome. Thank you, dear. Appreciate it. As far as the revenue share, I'd have to go back and look at his offer letter. I can't remember, I can't remember the exact dollar amount that we addressed, but it's a multiple of revenue that if John leaves, he gets to take, he can take the clients, but he has to pay for them. So, and I do have a non-compete in there and a non-solicit, but let's call a spade. Those are what I heard a phrase that non-competes are like hearts. They're just meant to be broken. So take it for what it's worth. I did as much as I can to preemptively address that and made sure that he was clear on his options, because I will gladly help him if he decides to transition somewhere else. I will gladly help him do that because I don't want to be involved in an environment that creates a toxic feeling for him where he's stifled and not getting out of this career what he wants. But I also want to do it in about what's best for the client and also what's best for the firm. So that's why we built that that provision in there. So, okay. Any other questions that we have here? I don't see any. I haven't seen anything. Let's see. So just got another question here. Thoughts, industry standards about how many households or volume of business a client service advisor, I'm assuming that's what CSA can handle. This is an interesting question here, Chris. And we just did that. One of my favorite business planning tools is a notebook. Shocker, right? And so we went through, and when I was at the capacity that we're at the firm right now, going through and determining when it makes sense to hire another advisor and or someone to support John. And so I did that entire exercise, just lined out here, identifying from a task saturation standpoint what his capacity is at, and basically, what we did is we came up with the fact that he is currently, his capacity is at 29 hours per week is what's geared towards client service right now. And so he's getting close to that capacity. How that translates for our new clients is, for our clients, he's probably going to be in that 80 to 90 households by himself and 100 to 110 households, maybe a little bit more than that. Again, it's still a little bit of a work in progress for us, just given our service model and how we work with clients and the cadence in which we're meeting with them and the service that we're providing relative to the fee and the revenue being generated. But I think we're still going to come into that that benchmark of, for John, as well as an office, as well as a practice manager and a service advisor that can help share that back office workload, about that 120 household relationship would be about where he's going to fall, 100 to 120 household. What we have realized is that the biggest time suck, this is going to shock everybody, right? The biggest time suck for John right now is new clients and the onboarding process and the planning meetings and building the plan. That is, that's the biggest time suck. Once the client is onboarded, given that we have Holista Plan, given that we have eMoney and Orion, and we get access to QuickBooks when the client joins us from a practice standpoint, so we can easily log in and pull the practice financials. We can pull the profit loss balance sheet, statement of cash flow. We can pull all of that, but it's getting that client onboarded, building that plan, that first year of planning is the biggest time suck for John right now. So the next person that we hire is going to be solving for the capacity of a quasi paraplanner / onboarding specialist that would work with the client through the first year of the relationship with the firm, and then in limited capacity going forward from there. But primarily, they're going to be responsible for onboarding the client and helping bring them into the firm, and also serving in a paraplanner role for John building plans. What about support staff, assistant? And so as we solve for 1A and 1B in the firm, it's solving for John's capacity as an advisor, and then also for Kathy's capacity as a practice manager in making sure that from a plan or from a back office perspective that we're not overloading her as well. So I wish I had a blanket answer. What I can tell you is that, and this is something that I am quite actively building out as we speak right now, there are a couple of practice benchmark assessment tools that we have in Limitless. One of them is a very robust spreadsheet that will quite literally solve for that HR capacity and quite literally give you the roadmap, give you the projections to say when the revenue gets to this, when the client count and head and household count gets to this, now you're at 80% capacity, which means now it's time to start thinking about when you would bring on that next person. You don't want to bring on that next person when you're already at capacity, because now you're just going to be compromising the conditions of their onboarding experience. You're going to be stressed as an advisor and as a business owner. Clients are going to be getting the best experience because they're going to be working with someone that's brand new, that doesn't know the ropes yet. You're going to be trying to feed things to them just because you're at capacity. So if you can avoid it, you don't want to hire when you're at 100% capacity. And the business planning spreadsheet that we have, and I believe this is in my model practice. I'm going to try and bring up the, there's a couple of tools that are being, and I know one of them, full disclosure, I know Limitless is tweaking the spreadsheet that used to exist. So it might not be there. I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I know there's a couple of resources out there that can help you project out where your business is going to be. And more important, I shouldn't say not more importantly, but in a corollary sense, what the human capital need of the practice is going to be given the service that you wish to deliver, right? Because if you're only going to give clients 3 hours of service per year, that's going to require a very different practice model and very different headcount than if you're trying to give clients 15 hours a year of client service. So it's one thing to look at number of households and revenue, which back to the question here, how many households or volume, a lot of that is dependent upon the service model that you're giving for those households. If you're going to give them 3 hours a year, well, you can handle a lot more households than an advisor or than a firm that's going to give them 20 hours per year. Thank you, Catherine. Appreciate it. The link there to the practice benchmark tool is in chat. So Catherine pasted that. Again, I believe that is in my model practice lesson in the library where you can go and pull that. So hopefully that answered the question. The question doesn't have as much information because we need to know what service model is going to be supported by those clients and those households you're going to be bringing on, and then who in the firm is going to be responsible. Keep in mind one thing that you should be considering when you're hiring your team members is how do you share the responsibilities, right? If I look at John's salary, if I look at in John's compensation, just to be transparent in how we did it. Essentially, it's 30% of revenue served. So on a quarterly basis, we pull the revenue that John's serving. We take 30% of that from an annualized out on a quarterly basis. We take 30% of that. John gets a fixed salary. So we take his fixed salary, 30% of gross revenue served. That delta there is essentially his bonus divided by four. That's his quarterly quote unquote bonus, which is just basically making him whole for the compensation. So there are incentives for him to earn additional relationships, the referrals, client retention is inherently built into that as well. So having a simplified compensation model like that for us, A, makes it easy for me as an advisor because all I care about is top line revenue and I can split that up. We use Orion as our way of combining financial planning fees charged as well as AUM build. So Orion makes it easy for us to be able to create a true household revenue or a true revenue per household and then split those households up by advisor served. So that makes it easy for me as a business owner to measure where the revenue is coming from and who's responsible for serving that revenue. And it incentivizes John in an indirect way to find new relationships. I'm primarily the one driving the business. And keep in mind, I'm profitable by giving John 30% of revenue. He's earned that. And my operating expenses are such that I'm still profitable on those clients to a tune of about a 30% profit margin by having those new clients. Now, the step up marginal cost for me when I decide to hire that next person or next persons by adding a client service advisor, paraplanner, onboarding specialist, you know, master number two, I guess you could say, someone sitting second chair to John and someone to backfill Kathy and help her from a capacity standpoint, that will create a step up in my P&L. And I'll eventually, you know, I'll take a little bit of a dip in my profit margin. I'm going down a whole rabbit hole here of the relationship of profit in the firm to cash flow in the firm. Those are related, but function differently. So that's a whole different business conversation about how you think of the cash flow in your practice relative to the profitability, the marginal cost of every new client, and when you increase that marginal cost by adding HR and adding staff, which is usually the biggest expense from a step up standpoint that a firm is going to. That a firm is going to experience. Because if you think about it, adding another new client has minimal marginal cost to a practice outside of, I pay an additional couple of dollars per account for Orion, a few other things here and there, but I've largely solved for the capacity because John is a salaried individual, Kathy's a salaried individual, I'm a salaried individual. So my marginal cost revenue relationship is relatively low until I have to make that next hire. And that's where my jump comes up. So that's that's a deeper conversation about how you think. But again, the practice benchmark, the practice benchmark tool helps you think through that and helps you give some of that projection. So it's a really unique, it's a really in-depth tool that I would encourage anybody looking to build an enterprise. And I consider an enterprise being anybody bigger than probably two, maybe three individuals, give some time to that spreadsheet. It can really help you think through your practice. Let's see, any other questions? I know I was going to potentially come back to Michelle and kind of peel back the layers of her onion as it pertains in. I think Barbara had asked a question of start to finish talk on marketing. I think that would be something that is going to be, I just don't think we can do it the service. And I promise I didn't vamp for this entire time just to eat up the time, but I don't know that we can do that. Do it the service that it deserves in 10 minutes before we are done for the day here. But I do think that it's something that Michelle, if you're open to being a little bit of a case study, we could, Lisa, do a tribe talk on that, kind of do an office. I mean, anything's open. I'm happy to, or if anything, we record the conversation, Michelle, that you and I have and post it in tribe for others to listen to. But it seems like there was quite some interest in, correct me if I'm wrong in this, and people, everybody just comment in chat if this is what you think would be beneficial to see. Performing essentially a year-to-date audit of where someone was prior to Limitless, the progress that they've made up through this 6 months, and then having one of us as coaches kind of spot check the plan, identify gaps in the progress, and give some targeted feedback as to where they can spend their time to best move the needle to get them in alignment with what their primary big why was as to why they joined Limitless. Is that Michelle, ideally kind of what you're looking for in the capacity and others? Is that what you would see beneficial in something like that?
Yeah, Adam, that would absolutely be beneficial, that and kind of an audit of, you know, how far we've come, but also some action steps, because you hear the success stories and it's, you hear the success stories without the first, I did A, then step number two was this, and then the third step was this. So it's kind of the directions to get there.
Michelle, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure.
I'm fascinated by your question. I want to know, under what time frame are you referring to these people who apparently are doubling and tripling their revenue since the start of the year?
You know, I don't have a specific time frame for. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. You know, because the first thing that struck me, excuse me, I don't mean to rob this.
No, you're fine, Andrew.
The first thing that struck me is, who's doubling and tripling the revenue since the start of the year? I mean, that's, and if someone's saying they are, then terrific, that's great, but that is an outlier. We are not all doubling and tripling our revenue. My revenue in AUM is down this year. And I would expect that most people's revenue in AUM is down if they're just starting Limitless and if they don't have everything dialed in. And the bottom line is, because I don't want to go on, but it fascinated me what you said, is it's the journey to do things step by step. And Limitless is pounding this into us. I know it. I mean, over the first 6 months of this year, I know that there are things that I have to do to move the dial, but it's not going to happen overnight. And the other thing is, don't judge yourself by what other people say. I mean, how many people talk about their golf game, about the great shots they made, but never the lousy shots? Or how many investors, my clients particularly, talk about their great stock picks, but never talk about their lousy stock picks? No one's going to go in a public forum in Limitless and say, hey, my AUM's down 50% this year. My gross is going to be down 25%. You know, that's just human nature. So my two cents for what it's worth is, do what you got to do, work on the process, improve yourself into what as to what you've done yesterday, and not worry about anybody else. That's it.
Well, that's very helpful. And you're absolutely right. And it reminds me of that, that like infographic or picture that you see the iceberg, and then you see the tip of the tip of the iceberg is the success. And what you don't see is this huge iceberg below the water. Right. So you're right. Their success story or path isn't the same as mine, but I would still just love to hear how some of these people are making it.
Well, yeah, I'd love to see some volunteers. Anyone who joined Limitless in January and have doubled and tripled your business, please put your hand up right now. I want to see you.
It all takes time. I would say Adam has tripled his revenue in 5 years.
Four? We tripled in three.
In three.
I mean, and I was just trying to pull that.
But it didn't all happen the first year.
No,
the first year is the year you get the fire hose of information that says, oh my God, I have so much to do. And then you start doing it.
So let me pull, because the easiest way for me to do it is to just do this. So my first year of Limitless, 2018, my top line revenue was $313,930. Total net income was $71,564. And that included, I think that included a payroll for me. Yes, that included me paying myself $73,806. That was 2018. 2019 was, I'm doing this in QuickBooks right now, and I can, 2019 was $394,435 in total income. Net income of $123,105, officer salary of $80,000, $79,840. I gave myself a little bit of a raise. So that was 2019. 2020. Run report. 2020 was 438. So I went, what does it say? 379 to 438. 438 020 to net income of 74,615. So I went down in net income. My salary went up. I paid myself now 90 grand. So a little bit of an update. I can tell you my biggest reason, 2020 was the year that I hired a service advisor. So back to that marginal cost, like my big job, I went from 123,000 in income down to 77,000 in net income because I made the jump to hire a service advisor. That was my first attempt, if you will, at a service advisor. 2021 in having that. So I went from 438 in revenue up to 670,000 in revenue and total net income was 206. And then projected for 2022. And I just ran my budget to actuals. And so my 2022 projections are going to be top line revenue of, where are we at here? 821, just in the, this, and this is just the RIA. This doesn't include consulting or any other businesses that I have. So 821 in projected revenue. Total net income, and I gave myself a raise up to 100 grand this year, and total net income of 366,967. That's a projection. Now, that's a little bit lower. Keep in mind, I bought an airplane through the business. Those are not cheap. So that does, like, there was a very strategic decision for doing that, but that was a big capital expense here in 2022, which brought things down. So my point is, and I'm transparent in that. I've never shied away from sharing numbers in Limitless, and I don't mind doing that example right here for everybody. I should graph that because it's good, like, visualization maybe for future content. But Michelle, to your point, and Andrew, to what Andrew confirmed and mentioned, all of this stuff that were happening, we had kind of a mock-up visual in Limitless where we basically told the story of Limitless of do this, then do this, then do this, then do this, then do this, kind of as a board game of the journey that an advisor would go through. Because all of the lessons that we're taking you through are independently related to one another. But doing all of them independently all serves the common denominator, the common goal of delivering the best value that you can for the client that you work with, identifying who you do your best work for, how you can attract them, how you charge appropriately, quote that fee, how you explain the value. Ed put in a comment, incorporating a one-page plan into the prospect closing meeting. Ed and I were texting the other day, just landed his largest client ever and several of their planning clients so far. Every one of you, depending on where you're at in your journey, are going to find one or two things that you're going to take in Limitless that are going to have a huge impact on the way in which you serve and thus how that translates to revenue. For me, it was the sales cycle. It was a say yes prospect process. It was raising fees up to par with the value that we were delivering, identifying the exact target market of who we did that for, and building out the service model. Like, just those three things alone helped everything else. Because when I got really clear of who we did our best work for, that made the marketing so much easier. Before that, marketing was like, over here, you just get torn in all these different directions because you're unclear of who you do your work for. So Michelle, I'm happy to kind of have that additional conversation offline because we're coming up on our time here this afternoon. But I wouldn't be too harsh on yourself if you're going through this and drinking from the fire hose, like Lisa said, where we're giving you all of this information and you're not going to be able to implement everything that we're talking about in Limitless in the timeline in which we're delivering it. You're not going to be able to completely reinvent your service model in the 3 weeks in between one coaching call and the next office hours. Like, that's just not going to happen. So our goal is to give you the tools that you need and then match those up with what your business needs. And sometimes that follows the path of Limitless. And sometimes it's a little bit of a meandering process, right? Where you're kind of picking and choosing. We've laid out Limitless in a way that if you chiseled away at it in a calendar basis, you have to do this before you do this, before you do this. It's why we typically don't start with marketing, even though advisors and Michelle to yourself, yeah, I just need more clients. I need more people to, it's like, if you do what we have learned in Limitless is that, and candidly, we didn't even learn this in Limitless to Steph's credit. This was the way it was from day one in Limitless. The reason that we don't start with marketing is because if we teach you how to market and how to bring on clients, A, you're not going to be very good at it. because you still don't know who you do your best work for, how to quote, or how to articulate that effectively and quote a fee appropriately. But even if you did, most advisors don't have their service model buttoned out. They don't have their human capital in place. They don't have their onboarding process and their planning process buttoned up. And so all you're going to be doing, if we teach you best case scenario, how to make it rain with all these ideal prospects, all you're going to have is a magnified problem that you didn't necessarily feel before because your business wasn't big enough at that time, potentially, to really have those problems feel. And that's, we don't want to do that. So I you might be a little bit too hard on yourself. I don't know, because we haven't gotten into the quantitative details of your practice yet, but I just wanted to kind of share that as we close up, that be gentle on yourself, be firm, right? Don't compromise. Don't say, oh, that's just an excuse. Like, be cognizant of where you're making excuses for yourself and where you're giving yourself a little grace. And I think there's a difference between those two. So hopefully that makes sense, right? Be graceful to yourself, but don't make excuses. So let's see, Ethan. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's very helpful, but I would still love a chance, like a little one-on-one to talk through some more pieces, parts of that question.
Head to the, go into the library or go into the Limitless platform, click on, I forget what it's, how it's labeled. It's like click on schedule or
it's a support.
Coaching center. Yeah, support. Yep. Support. Click on coaching center on the left-hand side and click on support. Awesome. And fill out a request and we'll take it from there. Michelle will take it offline.
Cool. Thanks.
So, all right. Well, thank you everybody for being here. Like I said, this is, I think this year, the first rodeo, if you will, of me going solo here. It's like, when the cat's away, the mice will play. So hopefully we had a good time together here. And hopefully if Steph goes back and listens to this, I'm still here. Yeah, right. But as always, thank you for your commitment to the program, to each other, to yourselves, to your practice, to your clients. Anything that comes as a result of this, questions at Marinade, again, feel free to tag us on Tribe. And we will take the conversation there. So thank you, everybody. Be well and enjoy the week.